You're listening to the Run Your Business Better podcast. Welcome to Run Your Business Better podcast. Today we're talking with Scott McGrath from Origo, and we're talking about outsourcing versus offshoring. So let's clear up the confusion about what the two are and why you should consider either outsourcing or offshoring. Welcome, Scott. Can you just tell me what outsourcing and offshoring are in simple terms?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think outsourcing and offshoring often get entwined in their interpretation. So very quickly, we believe that outsourcing is where you have a piece of work, whether it's a one-off or continuous, and you send that off to a third party. And that could be simply up the road in another state or in another country. That work's completed and sent back to you, and you're either satisfied or not, and you pay an amount, a small amount or a lot, depending on the task, the complexity and the quality that you want. That's what we term as outsourcing, which is fantastic for certain business processes.
So it's a transactional sort of activity. We're taking
absolutely
a transaction, sending it out to someone,
yes,
and it coming back. So, and if I wanted to get my shoes fixed, I'd go and send them out, get the shoes fixed, and they would send my shoes back fixed. And that is, so it's complete. It's just a transaction based.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Typically, in most cases, it is it's purely that transaction based. So, that's our interpretation of it. Offshoring, we interpret as building a team offshore, so out of the country, and it's about engaging full time employees or team members that work dedicated for your business and follow your processes and your way of doing certain tasks or whatnot in a full time capacity. It's not dissimilar to
geographical, yep, versus transactional. So the task is done in somewhere in a different geography location rather than sending it out as a transaction out to come back.
Yep, absolutely. So you could even term, offshoring just means there's a little bit of water or something in the way. If you opened up a Perth office, that would be almost the same.
Yep.
It's just with our offshoring model, there's some cultural differences because it's in another country.
Yeah. Wonderful. All right. So I know you're, it's Origo, BPO, offshoring. So, but before we get on to offshoring, because that's your passion, can we just talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages of outsourcing? Just so then we've got a bit of context when we talk about offshoring. So, what do you think of those advantages and disadvantages, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think outsourcing is wonderful. I think at the age we live in, it certainly can play a very important and crucial part in a lot of businesses. So, advantages: if you had an event tomorrow, you could jump online, you could find a provider, and they could quickly make you some brochures or fix a piece of work or fix up a spreadsheet for you and send that back. And that could be done within hours or days, and the problem solved for your business. So outsourcing has its place. Absolutely, it's fantastic in that regard. Some of the perhaps disadvantages are if you're engaging in an ongoing project, the continuation of quality. So the quality that comes back after a few months or whatnot, changing, whether that aligns with your business processes that you follow, whether the standards that you expect come back from your outsource provider is all just, it's also very subjective, but sometimes there can be some of the negative outcomes from it.
And then also you could lose that skill that you may have now to, say, bookkeeping, for instance, it's gone offshore, out to somebody else, that's left your business, if you like, that skill.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
So that whole capability. Yep.
Yeah, you're not really learning anything. You're simply outsourcing a piece of work inside your business that you don't have the knowledge to do, which, again, can be an advantage. I don't do things that I don't know how to do. I get someone else to do them. So it can have its advantages. It can have its disadvantages. That's subjective. And
I've worked on quite large IT projects, and one of the things as a project manager, and one of the things that I try to do is actually get people from the organization on the project team, and then rather than getting contractors onto the project team, and then backfilling those staff members' roles, so that when the IT project finishes, the knowledge remains within the company.
Yep.
Rather than, so you don't lose the capability in the firm when the contractors finish their contract and disappear on some other company at some other project.
Yep, no, absolutely.
So, all right, so. What about offshoring? What are the advantages and disadvantages, Scott?
Yeah, 100%. Advantages are scalability. You can definitely scale a business through building an offshore team. But I think one of the biggest ones that we talk about with our clients, and especially with what Origo does, is our ADAPT proprietary framework. And in a nutshell, that's really about processing the pieces that you want to offshore. So documenting, making sure that there's FAQs, that there's standard operating procedures that are created, that everything is documented in an order, a usable order, and that not only helps you build an offshore team and an advantage for your offshore team, but certainly allows your onshore team to have that documentation as well. A lot of times I talk about with my clients is the hit by the bus rule. What would happen if one of your senior managers here didn't turn up to work tomorrow? How much of a knowledge gap is there if that person resigns from their role? And through offshoring, or through offshoring with us anyway, we help to document that, or help you to, as a client, to document that and understand that those processes. So that's a huge advantage. That's a huge advantage.
And that's a really key thing, I think, anyway, for a successful business. And in fact, it's a chapter of my book around systemizing your business, because as a business owner, you've got to take a change from working in your business to working on your business. And you said about, hit by a bus, or you drop dead tomorrow. Is your business going to continue if you don't have it systemized? It doesn't, but I think the bit, and I think a lot of people knew, and I know this is something that you came up with, is they think that they're too busy to actually spend the time writing about processes and things. But the advantage for me about people systemizing, writing processes or doing video captures of processes or whatever, is that it makes them think about how their business is run and how it could be run better. And so it's a review process as well about their business.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about making sure that the team members on both sides of the fence are doing tasks that they're good at, and more importantly, in my opinion, that they enjoy. We spend most of our life at work. We might as well like it. So if we can take some of those tasks away from our team and give them things that they enjoy, that they're good at, that plays to their skill set, then that's a huge advantage. I think one of the disadvantages is, or it's perceived as a disadvantage, is the amount of time that's required. Offshoring and building a full-time team offshore is not a quick fix. It's not something that's just magically going to happen. It takes work, it takes effort, it takes devotion from your team, and it takes buy-in from the local team as well. They need to understand why the business is or the department is offshoring these particular tasks, and how that it directly affects them. The last thing you need is the conversation around the water cooler about we're losing our jobs, where statistically in our business across all of our clients, it just doesn't happen. If nothing else, we see increases in hiring locally, because they can hire better, they're more efficient, and they're making more money.
And the Australian staff, for instance, can actually do the things that they're employed to do and good at, rather than doing a whole pile of things that they don't employ, that are more compliance or routine or you know, churn and burn sort of tasks. And you can move those tasks to someone that's overseas that's getting doing that, so it's more value add to the employee back in Australia.
100%. And a great example of that is one of our engineering clients, where they had engineers 5 days of the week, out on site, but more so doing drawings, and then out on site and doing drawings, was very inefficient. Those when they were doing the back office work, they weren't billing out at the, you know, $400-$500, whatever they were, an hour. So what we were able to do for them is actually provide them engineers offshore that could do those drawings on a full-time basis. So there's a two sort of fold to this conversation. Those engineers then had Monday to Thursday that they were out full-time, full billable hours for the business. They were out there working, and they just spent 1 day a week, let's call it the Friday, QAing the work from offshore, making sure it was right, ticking it off.
So the Australian engineers were happier because they were doing the things that they were doing. The boss was happier, and the people overseas were happy because they had a role as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And our engineers, I love talking about, because they've got, you know, years of experience, mud on boots experience, but they love working in an office that, you know, has all the culture and benefits that I guess come with it.
Yeah. I also know that, you know, we've talked about in the past that you do some work, accounting sort of work in Origo. You have people there. They're all Australian CPA or CA qualified and things too. So it's not even like and they all speak English, and it's not like you're sending off and there's so much a language barrier or they don't understand how things are done here.
No, look, they're all
through your processes as well. There's a bit of a process in finding a fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
again, we look for what's the right fit for the business. So yes, we do have plenty of accountants, CPA qualified, a couple of professors, I believe now, Evan, right down to bookkeepers, and again, customer service administrators, which for my financial services businesses are more exciting. Well, I shouldn't say more exciting, but it's an exciting role and it's different because, yes, we do accountancy. To me, that's fine. It's compliance work. We've got well-qualified from, you know, junior through to senior, very highly qualified CPAs, et cetera, working across Australia, New Zealand and America. But our CSAs, customer service administrators, are the ones that are supporting some of those financial service clients where they're actually interacting with the clients, following up, where's your GST, where's your statement, where's this, how come this isn't done, sending out reports, here's your cash flow report, here's this, newsletters, and it's that client or customer integration that they're providing that traditionally hasn't been there for a lot of accountancy firms. And that I find exciting. On top of that, you have accountants that are just creating capacity for the businesses in country to go out and really become financial consultants, to really get out into the marketplace and
taking my job.
I don't think they'll ever take your job, Stephen, but they are. They're able to spend a lot more time with their clients and value add to their clients. And value add's a lovely way of saying they can charge their clients more because their clients are happy and they're getting a better level of service than an accountant that simply sent them a bill at the end of the year with a tax return. And that's what excites me. I think, you know, productive business people are always willing to spend money if they can see a return. And with offshoring supporting a lot of these financial services businesses, they're able to give a lot more to their clients now. And they get paid for it, which I think is fantastic. I've seen revenue increases across our clients that are huge, huge. And their customer satisfaction, their clients are amazingly satisfied because they've never had such an engaged accountant or advisor that you know, understands their business rather than just being reactive at the end of the year and asking them where the receipts are for the fuel.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I'm going to tease out a couple of things you've just said there a little bit. So you talked about cost. So what is a typical cost of a staff member?
I hate talking about costs because I think it's all about efficiency, but I will answer your question because I like you. Look, in the Australian market, it's around about 60-70% savings when you're comparing apples for apples in terms of experience of them.
Yeah. So if I've got a CA accountant with 3 years of experience in
correct.
Melbourne, correct. Yep. It's going to be about 70% saving. Yep.
Yep.
So that's the way you need to look at it from a cost perspective. Now, I wanted to talk to you also about, you were saying about staff and, you know, they can do all sorts of things.
I do.
You've got a
self-titled assistant. My lovely EA.
You talk really fast, don't you? So how does she find it? And you were quite specific about had to be able to have.
There's probably two tiers to this. It's the behavioral testing we do and it's the analysis we do of the client. Now, if we focus that on myself, as you've rightly pointed out, when I got that busy that I knew I needed an EA, and by, mind you, I would never have another job without an EA, I'll never let my lovely EA Donna go. We knew by behavioral testing myself the personality types and how I interact with people and my advantages and disadvantages. You've rightly pointed out, that's probably the easiest thing to talk to, not really a behavioral analytic, but I do talk too fast. I talk too fast for an Australian, let alone a Filipino. So one of the ways that we've overcome that with my EA, and she has an amazing grasp on the English language, mind you, her English proficiency is huge, probably better than mine grammatically with what I just said then. But we use recordings. I do recordings. So basically dictation. So I'll leave a meeting. I had a meeting with Stephen. We had a great podcast. Can you follow up and do this, this, and this? And Donna is able to replay those recordings if I'm talking too fast, as I sometimes do. So that helps. It's just a small piece of tech that's involved. But more so, it's the personality traits.
And she had to understand your sense of humor as well, didn't she?
She did. Yeah. And if I can get away from me for a second,
yeah.
I would like to – the best example I have is I have a small accountancy firm that was one of our very initial clients a few years ago. And there are basically one or two people in the business, husband and wife team, always time poor, probably, you know, are going to continue that way. We knew that we needed to provide them with a highly skilled accountant, but also a self-starter, because we knew that these people, well, we had a gut feeling. I'm not allowed to behavioral test, I don't think, my clients. I'd love to. But we had from our knowledge, we sort of had an idea of how they operated as a business. We knew they needed a self-starter. So we looked for that when we went through the recruitment process. And it's not a traditional sort of quality of a Filipino at the same time. So it's about matching the right talent. Skill set is one thing, but, you know, qualities through our behavioral testing to find out whether they're going to be the right fit for the client is just as crucial to retention. You know, I'm short and I'm very busy, and I can sometimes not use pleasantries with my recordings or when I speak to my lovely EA Donna. But she understands that, and we know from behavioral testing her that she won't be offended by that. That she'll work with it. That doesn't make me an amazing boss. It just, that's who I am. So it's about matching those two qualities.
Yeah. So this is, you've now entered into the sort of the conversation about something that I find really interesting. And I think it makes offshoring and your model a little bit exciting for me, I suppose, and that's around this whole behavioral testing. So can you sort of explain your process at Origo about behavioral testing?
Sure. Shortlisted candidates, very, very, very quickly, Stephen. The talent pool's huge. So we go through the talent pool. We make sure we've listed that down. We've shortlisted to the skill set that we required, and then we simply put them through. We use Caliper. Absolutely love it. It's a global company, and we put them through behavioral testing, and that just gives us an indication of their qualities, and not just how they'll fit in their role, in their specific position description, but how they will fit culturally in our office. It's super important. They must be a fit for the greater office. They must align to our vision and our mission, because if they fall outside there can be trouble.
I suppose this goes back to what I see the one of the key differences between outsourcing and offshoring is that with offshoring, it's your staff member, you know, they're just in a different location, be it Sydney, correct, be it Philippines, be it India, wherever. They're no different than having me going down the road, getting a recruitment agency to send some candidates and we sitting there interviewing them. And I know for myself, when I employ someone, it's 80% on culture and 20% on skills. You know, they've got to fit with the business and how we work and how we operate to be successful. If they don't, it's not successful. And I think that's the exciting bit about Caliper and your model is that, you know, you don't put people together that, that, you know, through your testing aren't going to be a cultural fit.
No, and that comes from understanding the client as well and choosing the right clients. Yeah. We're very picky with our clients because the Filipinos are amazingly hard workers, but there are some cross-cultural differences and it's about finding that right fit. But you've got to talk to your people. You've got to communicate. You've got to build a relationship. You know, we have personal relationships with our management team now. Our clients have amazingly personal relationships with their team members. It's really warming. But it comes down to the culture. It comes down to the culture that we've built, and our people have built, yeah. I guess, so, and created. Yeah.
I just wanted to. Last week, you and I met with a client of mine to talk about potential offshoring, sure. And we had a conversation a day or so later. And you said to me, and I'm going to paraphrase this, I don't think it's going to work.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to work for Origo, and I don't think it's going to work for the client. And that was not because Origo's bad or because my client's bad. It was just that they were in different places. There was a different culture. There was a different way of looking at it. There was too many differences, right? And you said to me, you know, I'm not prepared to onboard these people at the moment because it won't work.
Yeah, 100%. And I think their particular problem was a capacity problem straight away. Yeah. Lovely people. I could see them being very good, but they're just from a capacity point, and this is where we come right back to the beginning of our conversation, outsourcing versus offshoring. I'm not against outsourcing. It's just our terminology for offshoring is building a long-term team. And that particular client that we're talking about just didn't have the time right now. It would be detrimental to their business to stop and try and build an offshore team, and the results would not come in fast enough to provide them the benefit that they need, which is why I made that phone call to you and informed the client that they're better off to outsource the two or three things that they're focused on. Until they get some breathing space, and then I'm more than happy to re-engage and have a look at where we can help them.
Yeah, so in the interim, what this client should do, and I think they will do, is actually look at some tasks and just outsource them to create some capacity, because I don't even think if they went and employed someone in Australia that would be particularly successful because they just don't have the time to invest in it at the moment. Yep. So I just wanted to sort of make that point was that, if you don't have the time, you don't want to have them match the culture, then offshoring is really not the right thing. Find some task and offshore it. 100%. Outsource it, sorry.
Yeah, outsource it, 100%. You can't simply throw people at a problem. I say this a lot. I always hear the complaints about the offshore or outsourced personnel. From a personal point of view, it's the Filipino making the mistake, or the Romanian, or the Indian, or wherever it's outsourced or offshored. And we believe, and it happens every time, it's never the individual, it's the process. And every time we find that there is either a lack of process, a lack of understanding of the process, or simply a misguided position description or job skill set that's been allocated to those functions. You know, you mentioned accountants the other before there, and they can all speak English. Filipinos can all speak English for the most part. They've got good English proficiency. But I wouldn't have one of my fantastic accountants making sales calls. Their English is great, but they're not contact center people. They're a different skill set. They're a different brain. And it's about making sure people understand that when they're looking for a team. Not anyone can do all jobs.
No. And the other thing that I remember you saying once to me before as well is that you put an expectation on your clients that if they get something and it's not done mm-hmm. properly, not to just go, oh, bugger, and fix it themselves, then they send it back. Which is no different than what you would do if they were sitting in the office. 100%.
Look, Stephen, offshoring is not 100%. Anyone that expects to send something over to their team, even in an offshored model, and expect it to be 100% perfect, I would challenge them that their staff in country are doing that. But it's setting up to fail. And as I say to my clients as we're onboarding, this is going to break. Things are going to go wrong. And that's why we have a defect register. But in our experience, it's the small things that break the offshoring. And it's not necessarily the boss understands them, but the middle managers and the people on the ground in country that have to, converse with the offshore team, they need somewhere where they can go, hey, this bit's not quite right yet. So let's fix it. Let's work on it. Let's talk about it.
So the boss thinks that everything done right because the person that's managing or the contact person in Australia with the person in the Philippines gets the stuff, fixes it before the boss sees
it. Yep. And then they grow resentment towards that team member that they're basically covering. It's the same as if you had a colleague sitting next to that you had to keep fixing their work for. So we identify that and we make sure that there's constant communication. We have client success officers. They're not there to ring up our clients and just have lovely conversations with. They're there to be there on the day-to-day to ensure that the team is reaching their KPIs and those satisfaction levels in whatever tasks.
Yep. Now, just before we finish up, we're going to finish up in a couple of minutes. Tell me a little bit about the actual Origo office in the Philippines. They all go to an office, don't they? And it's quite secure. And tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think security is one of the things that lies in the back of the mind of a lot of clients that are dipping their toes into considering offshoring. We're across two offices at the moment, with a third coming on at the in 2019. All of our offices are power generation backed up, redundant internet systems, biometrics at the front door. So security is at a higher level, from a micro level right down to there's no USBs in the computers. There's no printing. There's no mobile phones inside the office. They're locked in the lunchroom in the cabinets, in the lockers, I should say. So I think in many a case, our offices are more secure than our clients' offices in a lot of cases.
So they're not logging in from home onto your accounting software where anyone that's or at the internet cafe where anyone can walk past and see the client's information.
No, not at all. And that's done through, I think we use a program called LastPass. There's many of them out there, but basically the console's locked down. They have one password that they know to get into the systems that their client requires them to get into, but they don't know the actual passwords of, let's say, the zero login, which means that they can't go down to Starbucks or McDonald's and open something up and do more work or work from home. And there's two sides to that as well. One's security, but the other is if you can't do the work to the KPI level inside the time frame allocated, then there's something wrong with the process. I don't like to hear that people are working after hours. I don't like to hear it here. If you can't do your job inside the allotted hours that I've given you, then something's wrong. Either you've got too much and we need to look at capacity, or you're not achieving the results and we need to look at some upskilling for you or other strategies. So there's two sides to that, but no, you're absolutely right. You cannot access outside of the seat you are sitting in.
Yep. And if I had a a offshore worker in the Philippines at one of your offices. Can I go and visit them?
Absolutely, you can go and visit them. And we encourage it. We absolutely encourage getting about 2 or 3 months is probably, it's not really a rule, but a guide. Getting 2 or 3 months under your belt, building that relationship through video conferencing and talking and going through the process, and then coming over and spending a week with your team and really having some really, you know, solid training and upskilling and getting them used to the process, both from a cultural point of view, but from an actual work point of view as well. So yeah, there is always a desk open for our clients to visit and stay, and they do. And yeah, that's an absolute no-brainer.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Scott, for that. Now, we're going to catch up again at some stage with another podcast talking about behavioral metrics as well, aren't we? So stay tuned for that. I think we'll do another podcast because that's a whole subject in its own. I thank you again for joining us today. Thanks, Scott from Origo BPO, for being my guest on this Run Your Better podcast. If you want to explore outsourcing more, you can contact Scott at Origo BPO or contact me and I can put you in touch with Scott. My takeaways from this podcast were there is a place for outsourcing and also for offshoring, and it can be a win-win for both the business owner and also for their staff. So have a think about offshoring or outsourcing, how you can leverage either of those options to take your business a bit further. And if you want to know more, please make contact with one of us. Thanks.